You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We are going to have a great show today. We got a wonderful, creative, rebellious guest. Eric Morley is the co-founder of Blue Sea. And when I asked him to describe Blue Sea, he said, this is the intelligent rebel of branding and contact of the branding and contact industry. So welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405, Eric.
Will, hey, thanks for the invite to come to your show. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you reaching out. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I got to tell you, first and foremost, is you got your book out. It looks really good. I can't wait to get my teeth into it. And it's kind of funny. It's like I've seen your name bounce around over and over, and I've kind of glanced through several of your shows. And this is the first time we've connected, even though we're so integral in the Orange County community. And pleasure to be on here.
Oh, we're having a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Yeah. So tell me, Eric, tell me a little bit about what got you into this business of branding.
I think it goes way back, is that I'm a second generation creative family. My father was in printing, used to print a newspaper. My mom was in direct mail. She did the direct mail for all the car dealerships. That's pretty much that put bread and butter on our table at a young age. And you kind of think about what you're going to do for a career is you typically kind of think about what you're good at and what you know. And being a print kid, I'd always go on Thursdays up to the Long Beach Press Telegram with my dad to pick up his check. We'd go across the street to the Thrifty's ice cream, and it was 5 cents a scoop. Remember those days? And then we'd head back in and we'd tour the press room. And it always inspired me, the idea of one little message can go out to 100,000 people really quick. And then on my mom's side is that what she did is she was the one that did all the postcards for car dealerships to get people in at the end of their lease period. And at that time, really wasn't leases, actually, when they purchased cars. So while she's watching TV at night, she'd actually hand address things. I was really looking at this. I'm going, God, this is hard labor work, but she really loved it. And she would actually write each one, pick each one up, blow the ink off, and then put it in the next pile while she's watching TV. And I just thought that was great. And it was the idea of like taking a message and getting out to the masses. That's how I started. My sister's in accounting. We've always considered her to be adopted because she didn't follow the same route. But in the early days of Blue Sea, and I got to give it a lot of credit up to my sister, Deborah, is she's the one that held our books together. She's the one that she lives in Sacramento. So it was a tough one, but it was, she did their magic, and she was our accounting person for the good first 10 years of the business.
Wow. So now I got to tell you, I have a prejudice against marketing and branding. Mm-hmm. And it comes from my 18 years working with salespeople. Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be always this real issue about what's the result of that we're expecting from marketing. And so often it seemed that marketing wanted to show off. I have actually been in marketing companies that had a whole wall of awards. Mm-hmm. And that was the most important thing they could say. And what I wanted to see was how many leads have you produced for the salespeople? Mm-hmm. So talk to me about results in branding and marketing.
Certainly. I mean, that's a really good question, is a lot of people feel the whole thing merges together. Blue Sea is a brand development and a marketing agency. We do both sides of the fence. The brand is a long game. The brand is, if once you put your brand together, you're not going to get your immediate results on it. But what you're going to do is you're going to get your foundation built. It's kind of like a house. Is that if you don't have the right architecture plans, you don't have the right engineers, is what's going to happen to that house? You know what? They might forget to put a sidewall up. They might forget to put this there, that, the other thing. But if you have those plans, those pillars, that vision, that mission, that values, that story, I was listening to a friend of mine, Pierre Wielander, sent me a video yesterday about his history. Is that, you know, he worked with Tony Hawk, started a business with Tony, and he's gone on to be a VC now. And his whole thing is that he only invests in companies with a brand story and have a brand story marketing initiative on it. Brand development is really putting a lot of these things together. So it's the basis for it. Marketing is taking that message out to the world. Is the results on marketing are very results oriented, but nowadays they're all interconnected. You know, I remember years ago is, I think it was maybe 18, 19, 20 years old, is we'd place an ad to sell something. It'd be all kinds of crazy things we'd come up with in the register, and people would actually send money in and checks in and to my house to buy these different things. And I was like, wow, this is great. The true reality is that stuff doesn't happen anymore. I can't just place one ad in and all of a sudden it's like everything is, you know, the postman comes in with his box of like checks and, you know, you're fulfilling and so forth. Everything's got to be interconnected together. And your marketing initiatives have to be a result of your brand architecture, but then your story and your message, and then what are those tactics together? It's almost like the ideas that we always look at everything that we do is basically, it's called a ghost, which is what is that goal? What is that goal? What is that objective? What are those strategies? And what are those tactics? And knowing what I know about you as an EOS implementer and your background of everything that you've done and everything you've accomplished and the results you've had for companies is, I would agree with you. I would be concerned about even hiring a branding or a marketing agency because different people have different ideas of really what they are. And I think the kindred spirit that you and I have is it's about systems and processes. Mm-hmm. Systems and processes. It's not just like, let's do this, it's going to save the world. Is everything falls with people, the product, and the process. If we can stay within that and create the processes, that's the most important part. So branding, brand development on our side is a system. Marketing is a system.
All right. So what I heard, what resonated in me when you were talking about the brand in EOS, one of the important things that we do is when we begin looking at where we want to be, mm-hmm. we first talk about core values, because that's important. And core values, it sounds to me like that's part of the brand, is what are the core values of this company, which is going to be reflected either in its service or its products.
You know what, 100%. And I think it's really important to understand is development of brand is you're going to have probably a very, very large percentage of practitioners say, yeah, I'll build your brand. I'll build your logo. I'll build your colors. I'll do your graphic standards. But okay, that's the creative expression.
Yeah.
What's the verbal expression? What is that architecture that's actually there? And it's the idea is like, let's start by a conversation. And values is, I am so pleased to hear from you on that, Will, because is the most important thing is like, if you have the values built in, if you have the mission, if you have the vision, if you have your pillars, if you have your brand story, if you have every aspect possible of building this architecture house, and then when you come in, it's going to make your job so much easier, and you're not going to have to fight through this to say, okay, what is it? Who are you? You've already agreed.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's first getting those core values there, then deciding what's our purpose or passion or cause. What are we doing this for? And it's not just to make more money. Mm-hmm. What is our purpose? And then what's the niche that we're going to focus on, that we're going to be the best in class in, not just the world. After that, it's, well, what's the end game? What's the 20-year, 10-year goal that we're looking for? And then what is it that sets us apart from any competition? What are the three things that make us totally unique?
You know what? And that's the value that you bring to companies to really ask those difficult questions. And I'm wondering is, do you ever ask those questions and everyone in the room kind of squirms?
Oh.
Never happened, right?
Our process is the first, we have three sessions in the first 2 months, all 7 to 8 hours off site with the leadership team. And yes, chances are nobody has really asked those questions. Sometimes people have imported values from Patrick Lencioni, you know, humble, hungry, smart, or from other places. They've imported and said, this is what we want to become. And sometimes that lasts for a couple of months.
5 minutes.
But eventually people begin to, on the leadership, begin to say, you know, this doesn't make sense for our company. This is not who we really are. And they begin to dig down to get to their core values, which is always exciting. And so, yes, this whole 8 questions that we ask that include, you know, what's your marketing strategy? What's your 3-year picture? What's your 1-year plan? And then what's going to happen in the next 90 days? That whole process does make people squirm because it's a whole new way of going about it.
And it's really interesting because that's what we found is if we go kind of go through the history of Blue Sea is we started in 1998. Our very first client was 13 casinos in Las Vegas. Our second client was House of Seagram's. And, you know, we launched their new Absolute products. So we're pretty much like a house of gamblers and drinkers. Is we had all you can eat shrimp cocktail at all the casinos. We had the card, you know, it was the best thing ever. And then it was like we would have boxes and boxes and boxes of samples of every single product they had. So pretty much on Christmas time, everyone would get those things in their stockings. And that's how Blue Sea started. We started as a creative agency. And it was strictly ads and radio, ads and radio. That's what we do is we do programs, ads and radios. Then we started distributor programs for Absolute. And then we became in the era of the, I'm gonna say it is the early or late 90s, early 2000s. It was, we were the creative powerhouse. We're the ones that brought the best creative to the table that really got clients to say, okay, that's what's going to create a difference in us versus our competitors. Big ideas, really focusing on just amazing things that get everyone excited. And it's always interesting is when you bring an idea to a client is they, if you get them really excited internal, that's 90% of the war. Then they just have to push it out to the world. And then moving on from 2005 to 2010, well, we know what happened then. And then, so we're gonna skip that period. But then after that is, we really started understanding is that we used to do brand strategy for clients, maybe two a year, every 5 years, that'd be a total of 10. We were good at it. We weren't awesome at it. We weren't great at it. And because we knew that we kept on recreating the process and we keep creating the system and we listen to our clients, what their needs are and re-gear the system, re-gear the process for that. So my business partner, Jeff Bentley, which he's an amazing creative. We got together as he was a creative person and now he's more leading the brand strategy here at Blue Sea. Is the thing is, it's like, well, how do we package this up so it's a process and a system, kind of like what you do, how you work with clients to help them get to the ends to the means. And so we started this thing called Brand Power. And it was interesting because we were at a sushi restaurant, we're having lunch, we meet once a week and we kind of just discuss things and so forth. He goes, well, hey, have you seen those progressive commercials on TV? And it's like, you can get your home insurance. It's like they walk in the back and they get that box and it's everything's inside it. Why don't we just have a systemized process that is going to help clients get to the end, to the means. And so we created Brand Power. And then from that became Brand Power Clarity. It's all about the purpose and the positioning and creating the values and the solutions and ultimately telling that story. And then we started working on the next part of the system, system two, which is called Attract, which is the marketing strategy and activation, how that whole thing works. Then we started Infuse, is how to create this creative campaign, this whole campaign development and how it works in with ROI, how it creates sales, how it creates leads. How is that process for B2B and B2C? And then we did Ignite, which is our content marketing and social media, because you know what? Content marketing is the king. Social media is the queen. I've started to get into chess with playing with my sons lately, and I've never done it, but I'm actually kind of inspired by it. And the king and the queen working together is gold. As soon as you lose your king, or as soon as you lose your queen, I mean, everything starts crumbling. And then Engage is multi-channel marketing. So, but those are all systems. So it's five systems to create brand power.
Well, yeah. And when you're working with a system and you have a scorecard, everybody in the organization has at least one measurable. When you're not hitting, you're not getting what you want, then you can go back and look at the system and say, well, now, is it that our system is not working? Is it that we're not working? What do we need to do? And it's not a black box.
Right. It isn't. And it's interesting you mentioned about the scorecard. Is I'm a huge proponent of the scorecard. Is when things are written out, people tend to become successful at it.
Absolutely.
When it's vague, it's the plague on it. And so, you know, from our side is that we create a thing very similar to that, is called Agents of Change, which are basically marching orders. And marching orders are, okay, you know, part of our brand power is this is what each person at the table has to accomplish, you know, both on the client side and also on the agency side. And it's really interesting. It's like, well, the question always comes up is, Eric, how can you've always been on the agency side your whole life. How do you even know what's in the mind of how to work with a client? And I say, let me tell you a story. Is not only are we an agency, but we used to own a wine business. And people are going, okay, you had a wine business. Yeah, you know what? 4 years ago, we started a wine business in Blue Sea. Why did we start it? Because I wanted all my employees to be focused on understanding what it's like to be in the client's shoes. And so our wine business, I love Mexico. I spend 16 to 18 weekends a year in Mexico, and Mexico is my first home. And so that kind of goes back to my roots in off-road racing. And then I continue to grow on it. But we discovered an area called the Valle de Guadalupe in Ensenada. And there is, in Mexico, you can only bring two bottles of wine back. So we became a importer and a distributor and online e-commerce and a wholesaler for the top wineries down there into America. And then everyone in the agency was responsible for it. So they had their own, kind of like they were actually on the client side, and we were highly successful. They became very successful that we had an opportunity to sell out to our other partners on it. And we did that. And that was the goodness. The business continues to go on for this day, moving on. But the idea is, it's like, yeah, we've walked in those shoes.
And we can develop systems that will be there long after we are, because that's what you're really selling, isn't it? You're really selling a system that works in the business.
Yes. And what's really interesting is, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this too, Will, is as an agency, is we've focused on these platforms, but there's a new platform that's coming out right now. First of all, companies are doing more with less. We just know how it is. You know, it's always a joke is I wear many hats, and it's like, yeah, you know what? You have to wear a lot of hats because you're constantly moving. But now you're carrying additional handbags, you're carrying backpacks with you, you're carrying a lot more. And a big part of it now is process management. And that's where I give kudos to you to get through the nuts and bolts of creating the process. you know, new technologies. New technologies are popping up left and right. And I've been very vocal about it, is Blue Sea will be launching in the next couple months, Blue Sea Electric, which is dedicated highly to the electric transportation, the electric components, as well as sustainable energy. Why is that so important? Is because that whole market is changing from pieces to pieces. Come here. You never know who's going to stop by Blue Sea. Wing Lam from Wahoo's.
Wing, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you. Hey, all the.
Hey, Charles Antis said that we got to get together sometime, Wing.
Yes, we do.
All right.
I'm going to put it in that closet, the thing right there.
That's fine.
The Yetis for the teachers for Whittier.
Oh, man. Hey, man.
Get up.
Hey.
Good to see you.
Right. Hey, good to see you, Wing.
Food in the fridge. Help yourself.
All right.
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's the way we work.
Yeah, Wing's actually got an office here, so you know what, it's always a lot of fun. So
yeah.
But
so back to my point. But you're talking about the electric cars. Sure. I mean, what I want to see you talk about in putting this together is, I think what we've learned in the last 4 years, at least what I've learned, and I hope other people have learned too, is there was in the last 10 years, there were a huge group of people that we discounted, we didn't listen to, we didn't even pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the people who got a voice in the last 4 years. And what's that?
Those are the intelligent rebels.
Well, what happened, I believe, what where we are right now, think of one segment that you're touching. Mm-hmm. Electric trucks.
Right.
There are 80,000 truck drivers right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the shift to electric, automated, self-driving trucks is going to be very rapid when it starts.
Mm-hmm.
80,000 people now do not have jobs.
Yes.
Now, that's somebody's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
All right. To figure out, work with, find ways of supporting those people who have families,
mm-hmm.
who have kids, who have purpose in life now, and when that's gone, what do we expect them to do? How do we help them find a new purpose that's going to be, you know, going to provide for the finances for their families? I mean, that's just one segment, and that to me is a place where somebody's got responsibility there.
Well, and it's not only 80,000. Is let's talk about those people that repair, that have independent repair companies that come in and take care of these. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the people that produce the parts. And keep in mind, when you go to electric, and one of the things that I'm a huge proponent on is electric. We're pushing hard to race the very first electric UTV in Mexico, the oldest race called Nora this year. And from Ensenada to Cabo San Lucas, electric, 100% electric is, but the thing it is, it's like, you've got two things. You've got batteries and you have motors and you don't have anything in between. So all we have to do is keep this thing straight line, and to be able to push forward, we will be successful. If you have a vehicle, you've got so many other things that can become a problem on it. So
my father owned a Napa store in South Texas.
You know the
right?
deal.
Yep. Right? And when electric cars come, all of that industry is gone. Now, they have legacy. The automotive gas engines are not going to go away immediately, but that mm-hmm. becomes a legacy industry.
So let me tell you something that's really scary about this. Well, there's two sides to it. Is will the grid be able to hold up for it?
Mm-hmm.
There is a huge concern about that right now.
Right.
There also the second part of this whole puzzle is, I'm a huge proponent of solid state batteries. Mm-hmm. I believe that's the future. And I've been, we do a thing here called Borders, where we go down to Home Depot and we buy a sheet of wood and we create these things called Borders, which shows the motor, the batteries, all the acceleration, all the controls and how it works as a proving ground on things. Is so from that we've learned is there's not a lot to electric. So you're not gonna need gas stations anymore. How many now you've got gas stations three in a corner.
Right.
What was it? I saw something is General Motors by 2025 is no longer going to offer emissions vehicle. The Dakar Rally by 2035 is going to be 100% electric. I have my friend Christine Gizzi from Barcelona, Spain, is she's racing in the electric e-competition, which is all about sustainability and diversification, or diversity, excuse me. And what's going to happen to those gas stations?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are the landlords going to do? What are the people that truck the gas going to do? So my thing is, it's going to be, it's not 80,000, it's 500,000.
Mm-hmm. But that's my point. My point is that what we did with NAFTA, mm-hmm, is we said, your problem, not mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on our side is, as an agency, is our job is to be progressive. Our job, mm-hmm, is to look outside. Our job is to do the things everyone else is afraid to do. And so, and it even goes back to our history with Wahoo's Fish Tacos, our history with Monster Energy, all our motorsports business, even our technology side. We have a division that's, you know, dedicated strictly to forward-thinking technologies. Is that's, there's always going to be change on it. And to your point is, what are we going to do with those people?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What are we going to do with the restaurants that only 40% are going to survive after March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a solution for that.
Do you?
Yes.
What is your solution?
Actually, you want my Wings brother, Ed Lee, he is the restaurant whisperer. Mm-hmm. Everything he predicts for the last 10 years has come true in the restaurant business. Ed Lee knows and has a concept that will turn the restaurant business upside down. So I can't say anything because it's one of those things that there's so many moving parts, but you just
it's not that we have to have the answers. It's that we have to take the responsibility for it. What I was amazed and I was so pleased with was my wife is in charge of an outreach ministry group in Riverside, mm-hmm, St. Michael's Church. And, she fed hungry. Well, she really pulled together a group of people who fed themselves. They had a kitchen in the parish hall, and the homeless folks came together and got food handler licenses and people who had cooked in various places, sometimes in prison, but they knew how to cook for large numbers of people. Every Thursday night, 100 people would come and they would eat. Mm-hmm. And it became a wonderful group. Well, COVID, that stopped. Mm-hmm. And what she discovered was that Inland Harvest had the contract for the USDA farms to tables, mm-hmm, food delivery. Mm-hmm. And they would literally have 18 tons of food every week delivered to a warehouse. And then I would go out with Mary and we would get a pickup truck and pick up, a ton of food. We had 222 pound boxes, mm-hmm, put them out, 100 cars would come by, pick it up, and off they'd go. Now that, when I saw that, initially it was, oh, here are some people who have a problem today.
Right.
And that's not true. These are people who had problems all along, and finally there was a way to help them. Well, mm-hmm, that program ran out. Now it may start again, but that program ran out, and now it's What do we do? Mm-hmm. But what I did see was there is a way for farmers to make money and for people to get that food. And, mm-hmm. and that was very impressive to me. There were 70 different groups like St. Michael's every Thursday would come and they would take that food out. All mm-hmm. 18 tons would be, 18 tons would be gone.
Well, you got a pretty big truck for 18 tons. That's like,
well, they had, so, well, what it was, yeah. was Stater Brothers paid for 18, two big wheel trucks, you know, 18 wheelers came in every Thursday and they would unload them and people would take them out on smaller pickups and trailers. It's amazing. Just amazing.
So that's a more of a pivot too, right? Which is, yes. is you know, we talk about the 500,000 people plus that yes. jobs are going to change. And I even look at, you know, one of our clients when they were here was Toyota. And, you know, they had the option, people, you know, I became really good friends and had the opportunity to race for Toyota for several years on their truck program and became really good friends with them. A lot of the employees had options to either move to Plano or get a parachute here. And the thing is like a lot of people just changed careers, went to other OEMs that were local, or a lot of them are at Rivian right now. You know, I just noticed in the business journals, Lordstown is moving here, which is electric. Okay. So they're creating all these new jobs on it. And yep. that's what I get excited about. But on your food thing is it's like, you know, we talk about pivoting and marketing. And this is why I'm saying is that it used to be there was a division within a company that was responsible for marketing. Now it's everyone's responsible. We yep. have one client, they have over 1,700 employees, 5 states. And you know who the most exposed, and I gotta be careful when I communicate this, is the most famous person in their businesses? It's their secretary, or it's the receptionist out front, because she's got 450,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
and what she is involved in, her passion is exactly what that company offers. So she's got a golden parachute. It's like, oh, you know what? I want 2 weeks off paid in Cabo and I want all my da da da. Yeah, no problem at all. Just post from there. Sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason that this USDA program came about mm-hmm. was because the farmers had no place to sell their food because restaurants weren't buying.
Right.
And we saw those pictures of pouring milk down the drain mm-hmm. and you know, the threat of food rotting in the fields. And that's why this worked so well. But what we learned from it is we can do things.
You know what?
We can do things.
It's interesting because one of our clients is Western Growers Association, which is agriculture. Mm-hmm. They're 55% of all of the ag grown in America comes from the Western states. We have the rest of it is in other states as well as other countries. And what I've learned from that is agriculture is alive and kicking. And it's really, there's challenges, but there's yeah. also, you know, they're going through changes too, is with technology, is you don't have to have someone on the field anymore, is you can be looking at this phone here of, okay, you know what, is the temperature of the ground is 50 degrees. It automatically clicked on because it has to be 52.5 degrees on it. And the watering on this left side is 0.2% off. So it already went off. And that's what we learned from our wine business down in Mexico, is everything's growing technologically there.
And you think, and who has to sit in the combine anymore?
No, exactly. But you need to have people smart enough to be able to read it. So yeah. they need to transfer. You know, you mentioned about the food thing is, do you know anything about the California Love Drop Wings program?
No. Well, yes, a little bit. Charles Antis told me a little bit about it.
Only a little? I'm surprised.
Only a little.
I'm
only
surprised to take 5 hours and tell you about it. It's like, this is the most amazing thing ever. Is April 12th. I'll never forget that day, 3 days before tax day. And so the wing calls me up and he says, And this has to do with our story of pivoting and process and systems and working together. He calls us, "Hey, Eric, I need some help delivering some tacos tonight. Can you give me a hand?" The thing you just have to truly realize is you never say no to Wing. It's just like you just go with it because it's going to be an adventure. It just happens. And so what happens is that with this whole thing is we deliver tacos. We had 300 meals to Irvine Hoag Hospital. And basically everything was locked down. There was a lot of confusion. What's going on? The airlines were closing down at that same time. We heard there was something going on. We heard there was a virus. We just didn't know. And so we delivered that. Everything's in lockdown. We had to walk it down this hallway and we saw people walking by, but they just looked like, half alive. They were just beaten, tired, the whole thing. So 3 months later, we did another delivery and to this hospital. Through this whole period after that, companies started calling Wing and calling me and saying, "Hey, can we deliver food to this hospital and this hospital and these frontline responders, the whole thing?" And so Wendy from KLOS, she's the marketing director, KLOS, and she worked out in Coachella and Stagecoach. Those are her babies. She created this thing called, she started joking. It's like, "Well, let's do something called the California Love Drop." She even did the accent, the whole thing. I was like, "Okay, cool, let's do it." Didn't have to go into any kind of jury, didn't have to run it past the board. It's like, "Okay, great, we're going to do it." So all these companies started saying, "Okay, Wahoos, can you deliver, you know what, I want to pay for this and I want it to my wife's hospital." So we created this thing. 3 months later, went back to Hoag Hospital in Irvine. And this is where it gets scary, is the scariness of it is the chaplain pulls me aside and goes, "Hey, Eric," he didn't know my name. He just said, "I just really wanted to tell you what you did." I'm like, "Okay, you're the chaplain. I mean, did I miss something here? I mean, do you have intuition?" And he goes, "No, I want to tell you what you did when you guys came here back on April 12th. And he says, "That was the scariest time because we're a healthcare facility. We have trained people on the staff. And what happens is when people call in sick is we have to call in traveling doctors and traveling nurses. And those are typically 4X, 5X of what their hourly is. It gets very expensive. But what happens when 35 and 40% call in sick? You have 35 and 40% X of these people you need to bring on as freelancers. Is you guys brought that food that night and we had 100% of people showing up and not calling out sick." So tacos, but it gets even more serious and it gets more scary. He says, "But let me tell you why people weren't showing up. There was a gentleman in Irvine. He went to Wuhan to go to his parents' birthday party. Everything shut down. He hitchhiked and got to Beijing Airport. Beijing Airport, he was there for 3 days. From Beijing Airport, he went to Heathrow. And if you've been to Heathrow, there's no comfortable places to sleep in Heathrow. Trust me, I've been there. But he was there for 4 days. So he's sleeping on his chair. And he's living in the Heathrow Airport for 4 days. He finally got a flight to New York. He was in New York. He was in one of the New York airports for 3 days, sitting in New York airports. At least they have comfort there because they're used to people sleeping days in there. And then he finally got a flight to Seattle. Seattle, that's when all the airlines shut down. Nothing was moving. He was there for 4 days. He finally got some kind of transportation to San Francisco. San Francisco, he was there for a day, got a flight to John Wayne, passed out, and John Wayne was taken to Hoag Hospital, Irvine, and passed away the next day. He was patient number one. But if you really follow the lines, infected all those people in all those airports. When the airports got shut down, everyone else was sleeping there too, right?
Right.
So that's what started the California Love Drop. Now we're basically in about 19,000 meals we delivered. And we're coming up with a 200th drop.
Well, I really believe that where we are as a country, as divided as we are, that it's not just from the top. It really has to do with local people working together. And what is my concern right now is that so many people have related to each other through talking points, mm-hmm. as if this were a football game. And yes. my job is to defeat you. Uh-huh. That's not human beings. Right. We are, as human beings, our job is to take care of each other, to, and not in a paternalistic sense, but to care for each other, to see each other as human beings. And I really believe that that we as Americans, now maybe there's some extremes on either side of this great divide, mm-hmm. but the 80, 85, 90% of Americans, I believe we agree on 60 to 80%.
Sure.
Of we're in total agreement about 60 to 80% of what we want to be doing.
Right.
But because of so many things, I mean, this desire to win, the desire to accumulate social media groups, and keep them on, the desire of large media to attract people by allowing people to be afraid, all of that gets in the way of us being human beings for each other. And things like the California Food Drop, Inland Harvest, all of that, we see people as human beings for the first time in a long time. And I think that's what we have to start doing. That's where the healing is going to come.
Gosh, Will, I you could not have said it better. Is those are the things I struggle with on a daily basis. And one of the things that the California Love Drop taught me, we've gone everywhere. Mm-hmm. We've been at 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning, dropping food off to the grocery stores or the grocery distribution centers, just so they can get toilet paper on the next vehicle so we can have it. And do you remember the toilet paper wars? I mean, that goes down with the gas.
We're right now getting rid of the small rolls from China that we had when we couldn't get them anyplace else.
You know what? Those are going to be collector's edition sometime soon. You know, stock up where you can. But the thing I learned about the California Love Drop is, I mean, first and foremost is I have a huge advantage and I am so 100% grateful for it, is I have, outside of Blue Sea, is I have the Love Drop family, from Wing to Charles to all the team at Monster Energy to the team at Endwater to, you know, Melissa over at Yogurtland to the Cholula people to KLOS Radio to, all the people that have been involved. I think it's like been like 90 or 100 different companies that have contributed to it. And they're part of the family. This is the thing, my biggest advantage that got me through the pandemic. While everyone was sitting at home working on their projects and trying to listen to the news to figure out what that next it was, is we were doing things. We were going to Watts. I've never been to Watts, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. We got to deliver 700 meals to the community center, which is run by the sisters. Actually, it's the Sistas of Watts. And this is a community of women that take care of the city. And these girls have so much soul. I mean, we're handing out meals. There's a line 7 to 10 miles long. They got the LA Galaxy soccer team to be a part of it. One of my huge fanboy soccer players is Kobe Jones. He was there and was like, wow, is this like that? The Sisters of Watts are singing soul in the background. And it was like the most amazing thing. And I'm just, I stay in this bubble. And I always try to get outside this bubble because I'm a huge proponent of getting outside of my comfort zone. I love that pain. I love that strive. I love what that is. And the sisters go, it's like, Eric, you're just enjoy yourself. And it's like, no, I'm enjoying myself. I'm just loving what's going on. And it's like, okay, after we finish here, we're going to go take you to the Watts Towers. Have you ever been to the Watts Towers? I'm like, no, I want to go. So they took me through that, and they're the pride and the proudness of these towers, which are in the middle of a residential community, and they're saying what it stood for. And my, because I'm just, I try to be knowledgeable in everything. I thought it was for celebration after the riots, or the riots were somehow tied into it. It's like, no. It was this guy from Italy. He came here. He bought a piece of land in Oakland. And then he got married, and a few years later, he got a divorce, and they sold that land. He took the $500 he made on the land, and he bought this little plot in Watts. And because he was so depressed because he lost his wife, he started building stuff, and he started crushing tile and making this whole thing, and it was Watts Towers. And it's like, wow.
Right.
Right. Crushing. But and to me, is... For some reason, I cringe when people say, oh, we're hashtag, we're all in it together. No, we're not.
No.
We got to work together.
Right, and, right,
and,
right.
But I was able to see different things and learn about the Watts brand. And that was cool.
But you get to meet human beings rather than stereotypes.
Yeah.
And that's what somehow... we can learn again how to do that on a scale.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I remember when we went to Martin Luther King Hospital, and it was Charles's first love drop, and he's sitting there still trying to figure out what's going on. And he goes, he comes up to me after, he's like, okay, I know you hang out with Wing, and I know you've been doing this stuff, but what do you really do? I wasn't quick enough. I wish I would have said, it's like, oh, you know what? I'm starting a business. I'm going to be Jeroen Roofing, and I'm going to put every single roofing company out of business in Orange County. That's my goal. And there's this guy named Antis Roofing. I just want to crush him to the ground. But I said, no, we do branding and marketing and so forth. So
right.
It wasn't as fun. But the point is that, yeah, you just kind of keep moving on. I mean, I look at you. I look at your aunt. You never stop. You continually, you're on this road. You're on this path of discovery. And it's kind of funny because people I've known from past lives that have just done amazing things, they're on your radio show now. And it's just, I mean, that's what it's about.
Yeah. You know, I spent 2 days last week at a place called the Arbinger Institute. It was all online. Uh-huh. But this, I first read the book there in Utah. And the first book that I read from them was called The Anatomy of Peace. Hmm. And their whole thrust right now is moving from the mindset, from an inward mindset to getting what I want to an outward mindset. And that's what the California Love Drop is about, right? It's not about Wahoo restaurants building their brand so they can sell more stuff. It's about meeting the needs of human beings. And that's what this whole workshop was about, was how do we move from an inward mindset to an outward mindset? And I want to know how to spread that message, how to make that part of how politicians work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not about winning and losing. Right. That is so counterproductive to what to how we meet others' needs that it's ridiculous.
It's interesting what you say here, Will, because I start to really think back at the last 11 months, and I've been extraordinarily lucky is that because of Brand Power has definitely kept Lucy busy. We've done 28 of those since the beginning of the year, which we've had banner months all through the pandemic, and it's been awesome. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I see is that when Wing started delivering the California Love Drops, is his whole goal, it's not about his pocketbook, it's about keeping those 40 employees and those 5 stores open. Mm-hmm. And I actually, I don't know if he likes me repeating this, but this is like the super deep, dark secret about him, is I said, well, why don't you do stuff for yourself finally? I mean, why don't you, you know what? Why don't you capitalize on this in one way or another? Why don't you do different things to make more money in your pocket?
Yeah.
And he goes, right. It's not about me. It's about everyone. Mm-hmm. And I'm leaving parts of the story because I don't want to pull different names into it without their permission on it. But the idea is that he cares for the human race. It's like his whole goal was, it wasn't about making money, keeping the stores open, the whole thing. His whole goal was keeping those 40 people employed so they have a paycheck to take home to their family. I was like, wow. I mean, it's weird because Wing is so interesting. Back in 2007, he always wanted to race the Baja 1000. So we got him in the Baja 1000. It was the same year he was working a lot and communicating back and forth with Patrick Dempsey. We put him in a race truck and sent him out first thing in the morning. They went about 250 miles out there. Then there was a pit stop where we're going to pull him out. And one reason you kind of got lost, and they took about 20 minutes longer to find us. And so our group around our pit stop got bigger and bigger and bigger of other people that were coming through. So they finally stopped. He comes out of this truck and, you know, it's a 600 horsepower, you know, $1 million truck. And he's all dirt, the whole thing. And his hair is just wadded up and, you know, kind of doing the whole dread thing because he's got the long hair. And he gets out and he goes, oh my God, this is great. We're talking the whole thing. They put the new co-driver in, they take off. And then there's this guy behind me. He must have been 90 years old. Ranchero guy, wrinkled skin, dark skin. He's got the helmet, the belt buckle, you know, the old cowboy boots that are just, you know, almost like hand designed for him, just weathered. And he's sitting on an ice box and he opens the ice box up and he gets a nice cold Ducati and he hands it to Wing and says, you're the Wahoos guy. And I'm like, that, first of all, that was weird. So we're talking a little more. Next thing I look back, the guy's gone. The ice box is gone. He's gone. I'm like, this is just weirder than weird. But the thing is, it's like we're in the middle of El Diablo dry bed in the afternoon, tipping about 4:30, 5 o'clock. The guy knows Wahoo's there. And why is it? Why is it? It's not about the food. It's not, it's the food, the talk, the food's expected to be expected, but it's the thing about it is that giving, caring philosophy for mankind.
He didn't say you're the owner of Wahoo's.
No.
He said, you're the Wahoo's guy.
Yeah.
You are a human being.
Yeah.
And you see what I heard again and again from what you're talking about is what the fellow that I look to for a lot of my, he's the one that I look to as my mentor. And he said, you know, what's the most important thing? Love God and love your neighbor.
Yeah.
And somehow we forgot in that, you know, somehow we got confused thinking that business was there for the owner to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The business is there to meet the needs of my clients and customers. Mm-hmm. And to provide a you know, a lifestyle for my employees.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that by picking everything up and moving it to the least expensive labor market in the world? Mm-hmm. You don't.
Yeah.
You had to forget something in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that NAFTA was completely wrong. But I'm saying that our response to the people who were left behind was very severely lacking.
And as a lover of Mexico,
yeah,
as I've seen businesses on both sides of both America and Mexico prosper as an extension to the business here.
And I grew up in South Texas in, yeah, in what was it called? Montequilla, wasn't it? An example of what I believe was a great thing was in this little town of Edinburgh, Texas,
mm-hmm,
when there were not enough jobs, they went out to Hager Slacks and brought them in and, mm-hmm, did whatever they need to do to build that plant and provided jobs for people.
Right.
And that it's remembering that these are human beings. They're not just an object. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we have we have a lot of room to grow in our perception of people as human beings, not just objects.
What you've done is what we do for brands is you've clarified the objective. You clarified the mission, but then the mission gets garbled out there because there's new stuff put on. You know, every time you wake up in the morning is the media has a free-for-all to just pile stuff on. And if they don't pile stuff on, they're out of business, right?
That's right. That's right. If we don't cause you to be either titillated or afraid, then we lose business.
I mean, what would the news be like if it was 100% straightforward, no glitz, no glamour, nothing, everything honest? It'd be a 12-minute show.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, let me ask you. Mm-hmm. We have spent 50 minutes so far, almost an hour.
Best 50 minutes of my day.
Well, that's great. Me too. But we could have talked about all the things we are afraid of. But what we did was we talked about things that we saw that were great. And I believe that there is room for media to talk about the things that are going well, which is 80% of what's going on in the country. Mm-hmm. Just don't believe that that's the only way to build a media empire is through fear and uncertainty and doubt.
It's interesting because California Love Drop is something really near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. And it's actually for two reasons. Is all the people involved have a heart of gold. There's no conflict. We've never argued about anything. It's like, we're like actually a happy family. It's really weird. And I'm passionate about it for what it does and what it's given me. I mean, it's been a true gift. And so I've talked to media and I said, hey, do you want to cover this? Do you want a story on it? And I've gotten more times than none is I'm sorry, it's not relative to the world we live in today.
I agree. That's my point.
Yeah,
because it's not relative because we can't treat them as fearful objects or as ridiculous objects. There's no entertainment value. There's no fear from it. So that, you know, this is our business model. And it, because that's what I'm saying is that we can learn how to treat people as human beings. And any human being that we treat as a human being, we could have a tremendous story about. Mm-hmm. That would be glorious, that people would really enjoy hearing. But it's a business model that we got to look at.
Well, and let me ask you this question, Will, and I think you're the absolute best that would be able to answer it, is do you believe a business should be a business with a purpose?
Well, what happens when we identify the purpose of a business, mm-hmm. then people have the choice to continue working with a business with a purpose or not. But the people who stick around through the EOS process, which is not a two-day seminar, it's a long-term development, people become happy. They enjoy doing what they're doing because one of the tenets is you want to delegate the things that you don't want to do to people who do want to do them and elevate to do the things that you really are good at and love doing. So, yeah, business gets a purpose, and that purpose is not just to make money for somebody.
Right. Well, it's really interesting you bring this, is that back in 2007, 2008, 2009 is Wing and I created a thing called Wahoo's Baja Support Run, where we actually mm-hmm. took care of orphanages. Why did we do this? Is because we had a lot of friends down there at that time that had come down for that time that have nothing to do. So mm-hmm. he would corral them all. And we get 100 people together and we go to an orphanage and bulldoze it out and figure out what needs to be done and paint, build, scrape, do whatever. And then of course, Wing's there as he gets everyone started. And then he goes, I'll be right back. And he always goes to Costco, fills his truck full of food. And then he's the chef on board. So you got like the best food of everything. But the point is that was for good. That was for the good. And that's in the heart of good and how things happen and why things happened. And I always look at those things and I learn from them. As a company, we have a thing called Blue Sea Cares. It's a very strong part of our mantra. Is number one is be nice to Will. That's number one. I'm joking. And then, you know, it's basically is the whole thing is be good to our community, take care of our community, take care of those in need, and take care of the next generation through mentorship. That's a big thing. So that's, you know, a big part of it, of how we're set up. And I'm not the most wealthiest person in Orange County, but I really think I'm wealthy in the idea of gratitude.
Yeah.
And being able to meet people like yourself and your community that really are doing good and are questioning that idea and figuring out is how can I become part of the solution versus how can I be part of the problem? It's too easy to be part of the problem. We all get sucked into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the people I interviewed on my radio show, digs wells in Uganda. He was a real estate, very successful real estate guy in South Orange County. And then in 2008, 2009, it all went away. And he began to look for that voice inside. Well, what do I do next? What do I do next? And he had been in Uganda before working with some schools. And he realized that many of these rural communities in Uganda did not have running water. And so he said, I'm going to learn how to do this. He has done thousands of wells in Uganda.
Is this
called Living Wells?
Living Wells, yes.
Uh-huh. Living Wells. And so I invited him on the radio show, and we've done a couple of them. And he, you know, I was asking him, how can I help you? What can we do? We discovered that several Episcopal schools were contributing to Living Wells. And so we began to extend it to other places in the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles, talking around. And finally, the local church here in Laguna Beach wound up over Christmas raising enough money to do two wells. Uh-huh. Well, that was wonderful. One of the times when I was out with my wife handing out food, one of our Native American brothers came up to me and he whispered to me and he said, do you know that on the Navajo reservation that there are thousands of people who do not have running water? And I'd never heard that. I hadn't heard that before. And so I said, wow, well, that's amazing. I mean, that's right here. And we have people here who are from the Navajo reservation. He said, yes. So I called up Living Waters and I talked to him and I said, have you ever thought about, you know, doing something in the net? He said, I know about the Navajos. He said, but my world is Uganda. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going to see what can be done. Mm-hmm. So I began to dig around on this thing called the internet and Googled it. And there's a place in LA called Dig Deep mm-hmm. and they have a Navajo water project.
Wow.
And for $2,600, they go out to these individual houses and they dig a hole, put in this big reservoir, and then also put on solar on the roof mm-hmm. and put in running water. And then they've got trucks that come by every so often and fill up that reservoir that's buried in the ground. And what I want to do is I want to come up with a way of raising about $100,000 every year mm-hmm. to just ship to Dig Deep because they are doing a great job. They're doing it there. They have another project in West Virginia for people there who do not have running water. And it, to me, those are the kind of things that are done at a local level and we can see exactly how we're loving our neighbor in doing it. So, you know, I think those are the kind of things that make a huge difference.
And I wow. I mean, that's a really, that is an awesome story. I think about these things and the power of vision. The power of vision is, if you have a vision, it's a lot easier to get to the destination. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so important. And clarity is the dig wells, dig deep, is they have clarity. This is what they do. Super important. Yes. And yep. I admire that you've got that vision and you've got that passion and you've got that aptitude of what completes you. It's, you know, I think it's really important is that, I mean, you're always so gracious with your time, Will, and you're always here to find out about other people. And I truly appreciate the time and, you know, spending this time with me. And, but I want to know about you. What drives Will?
What drives me? I love solving problems. Now,
I got a bunch for you.
Well,
be careful what you ask for.
As we're celebrating our 44th wedding anniversary this year. Uh-huh. And so I've had to learn not to try to solve problems with my wife all the time. Yeah. Sometimes yeah. Most of the time is just, please listen. don't try to solve it.
And don't give your opinion either. Just listen.
That's right. But I love working with organizations to help them clarify where they're going, who they are, and how they're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And then extending that throughout the whole organization. And when I, you know, at one point I thought, well, you know, I'm really good at listening to people and I can be a great coach. But I realized that coaching one executive doesn't necessarily change the organization for everybody. Mm-hmm. And when I discovered the entrepreneurial operating system, discovered EOS, and realized that when the leadership team works together harmoniously to accomplish the vision, that often comes from the owner, the founder, or what we call the visionary, but they've bought into that. They see that, and then they're working harmoniously to achieve that, and it's a long-term vision. Then they learn tools to extend that through the whole organization so that everybody winds up having a part of that purpose. And the transfiguration that I see in businesses is so exciting. It's just absolutely exciting. I mean, people wind up not having to work as hard as they thought they would have to work, mm-hmm. but achieving a whole lot more.
Right.
People wind up being much more disciplined and accountable, and it becomes more productive, but it also becomes a lot more fun. And when that happens, that to me is the greatest thing.
Do you feel, with that being said, and going back to your earlier statements about coaching, I almost see like a coaching as a passé thing to do. It's coaching's like, okay, you know what? In baseball, it's like, okay, you know what? Hit a little harder, hit a little more to the right, run a little faster. It's like, that's coaching. What I'm learning about you is that you're a transformation officer for the company.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're here. You know, it's like, it's funny. It's like, I met this one guy recently and he handed me his business card and his title was long. I'm going, you know what? And they make it the title super small because the title is so long, it needs to fit in that space. And it was Chief Executional and Transformation Officer and Development. And so I said, you know, I said, Jim, so you're this guy, huh? And he goes, I guess. I go, what are you going to do? Whatever they tell me to do.
Oh,
well, you're really not being a transfer. If you're, it's like, if right. they're telling you, it's like more of the same, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, but I get, it's a job and I get paid for it.
Oh,
and it's yeah. like, oh boy. And then I said, We've got to talk. We have to talk. Yeah. What are we going to do? So I think the world of people that can be and help become transformation officers of companies and helping companies take them from where they're at right now and take them up this chain through strategy versus accidental quint. Because the true reality is a majority of businesses accidentally got into business. They didn't, they weren't like, okay, I'm going to go to school for 4 years. I'm going to go my master's again for another 2 years. I'm going to get my PhD because I'm going to be going into this and that. And they're just like, no. People are like, okay, I got this. I can sell this. Okay, great.
So they're I can make money doing it.
Yeah. Good money.
But what I found that the reality is if you are listening to people, meeting their needs, the money follows.
And asking good questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you find out what their needs are. You know, what are their needs? What are their objectives? What are their challenges? Mm-hmm. Where do they want to be 5 years from now? You get all that out there.
Where do they want to be 5 minutes from now? Days from now?
Yeah, how many people have asked them that question? Very few.
Totally. I think it's that I'm a huge proponent. It's kind of like a good doctor. You never walk into your doctor and he looks at you in the eye and he says, okay, you know, I've been in business for 22 years. I went to this school, this school, this school. I went into these, this here. And I think you need a cast on that arm. It's like, oh, well, I'm here for a sore throat, but you really need that cast for that arm. And by the way,
on it today, a special. two casts for the price of one.
and if you subscribe to our subscription program,
right, that's right.
We don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but subscription.
Oh, this has been great. Lot of fun, Eric. This has been a lot of fun, and this will be the first of many conversations we're going to have.
We're going to do this once a week, right? We're going to have
absolutely.
I can see it. The Will and Eric Show.
I'm ready.
All right.
Super. Well, all right. So what would you like to, for people to do who are listening to this? What would you like them to do? Do you want them to call you? Do you want them to get in touch with you?
Well, you know what?
Say, hey, bring California Love Drop to me.
The other thing is that my passion is taking care of other people. And I always want people to go to, if you're on Instagram, go to California Love Drop and just follow us. Just follow us. Don't do anything else. Don't send any money. Don't go to Wahoo's. Don't buy a Monster Energy drink. Don't buy a hint of water. Don't. Just follow us. Or if you want to go to the website, californialovedrop.org, you know, just take a look. We've got a bunch of videos on there, the different things. And then if you post anything on it, just say hi to Wendy, because Wendy's the brainchild of what is really helped bring the California Love Drop to what it is. And the thing is that if you want to get involved, you can reach out to me. I also encourage you if you want to see kind of the adventures and everything I go through, I'm starting to get a lot more personal, a lot more transparent on my Instagram. So you go morally_Eric, and you can kind of see what I'm into and what's a big part of my life. If you need brand clarity, if you're in a funk, if you don't like where you're at right now, just send me, let's have a conversation. I'm not here to sell anything. To be honest with you, I'm the worst salesperson in the world. I can't even sell myself when I walk into a car dealer. So I'm that bad. But my point is that I love to help, and it's about helping. And over and above everything else is, I guess what I really want is one word. Is positivity. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to go down a negative route because it's available. And when you go down a negative route, especially when you're talking to someone and they go, yeah. What does that do for you? It gets your endorphins up. It's like, okay, cool. I'm feeling good because I said something right. The whole thing. It's not right. It's get your endorphins up by doing something positive. Just doing one thing good for someone today. And it's the thing is that as a community, and you're in the ecosystem of the community, Will, you're the one that a lot of the media swirls around. And the thing is that be a part of the ecosystem and just care and do something good. It will make you feel good. And I guarantee you it will make your week. So that's it. That's all I ask.
All right. So they can get in touch with you on Instagram, yep. Morally_Eric.
Uh-huh.
All right. Great. Well, it's been wonderful. What's that?
Or if you want to go to the website and be humored, bluecusa.com.
Excellent.
And it's the C, it's not the SEA, it's bluecusa.com.
Bluecusa.com. Excellent. Well, to the audience, this is just one example of how, even in the midst of a raging pandemic, economic issues, that we can thrive in business in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.